Hi, everybody. We are back. And if you've been following along with us through this year, you will know that we had a big trip planned out to the Sierras and hiking Mount Whitney. If you happen to listen to our Mount Whitney pre-visit revisit, you'll have a little bit of detail about how we were prepping for this hike, some of the permitting process, etc. In this episode, we are going to go over how we physically prepped for it and some of the things that happened along the way on our Mount Whitney summit trip. Hope you enjoy, and welcome to Adventure Stop. Welcome to Adventure Stop. Today we're going to be talking about our recent trip to Mount Whitney. We had a lot of planning that went into this trip, a lot of exercise. We did a revisit that we put out a few months ago before we went on our trip, and kind of called it a pre-visit revisit because Dan did this trek a while back, but actually came up from the other side of the mountain than what we did on this go-round. So for him, it was a little bit of a revisit to the summit, but via a different path, which is pretty cool. So kind of a new trip for him as well. For anybody who doesn't know anything about Mount Whitney is the highest mountain in the contiguous United States, so that's the lower 48. The elevation is, I'm going to say, guesstimated at 14,505 feet. Now that is a very educated guesstimate. It seems to change a little bit every now and then. They'll redo the surveys, and I don't know if it's from the heaving of the Sierras or improvements in survey equipment, but that height does seem to vary based off of which source you go to. Dan, I don't know how high it was when you did it a few years back, but
roughly the same. I think it also depends on what piece of swag you're buying and what label they put on a piece of swag, whether it's 14495 or 14.5 or 14508 was, I think, the highest estimate that I saw.
Yeah. So Mount Whitney is in the Sierra Nevada range. It is East Central California. So that is Inyo County, California, which was a pretty interesting drive for us. And it is pretty near Death Valley, Badwater Basin, and not too far from the Yosemite Valley. You can actually take the John Muir Trail through that whole area between Yosemite and Whitney, and it's a beautiful hike. So a lot of people do that and enjoy the summit of Mount Whitney as their kind of penultimate point on the John Muir Trail. But yeah, it was a really exciting trip. We can talk a little bit about the prep that we put into it. So we live in Central Ohio. And Dan, what's one thing we don't have in Central Ohio?
Mountains. Hills.
Hills of any kind, really. I mean, we have some small hills, but you have to drive 1.5-2 hours to Southeast Ohio or Southern Ohio to get any sort of hills. So to train, we decided to kind of explore our area and see what kind of incline style things we have in the area.
We're also at like 800 feet elevation, so the thin air, low oxygen is not something that we can easily train for. So when I've done stuff like this in the past, I used to use a Stairmaster at the gym and just stand on that for a long, or not stand, you know, do stairs on the Stairmaster for a long time. We would do ankle weights on occasion. I know Amanda got yelled at one time for having a backpack on. For whatever reason at her gym, they didn't want her having a backpack on the Stairmaster, so we obviously have talked lately, I've been doing CrossFit. They don't have a Stairmaster at that CrossFit gym. So there is actually, it's called the Hoover Dam here in Westerville, Ohio. we kind of looked it up. It was like two local brothers who happen to have the last name of Hoover. It's not J. Edgar Hoover or Herbert Hoover or anything along those lines. So it's 105 steps up. They do have kind of concrete steps going up one side, and it's 105 steps up. So we made a habit kind of a couple days a week of going there and doing these stairs. We would kind of put our packs on and boots on and, you know, all the gear that we plan to have. And I think the most we did was 50 rounds up, 50 rounds down. So it, you know, was just sort of steady cardio, keeping the heart rate going, building up the kind of balance and leg muscles. She was also testing out a few pairs of shoes. She went through an inordinate amount of footwear getting ready for
it. I have bad ankles, so I feel like it's something that I need to make sure I have the right shoes. I ended up, so it started with some Danner Mountain 600s, which honestly they're a great boot, but for what we were doing and the region that we were going to and the weather, they were honestly like too cold weather gear for this trip. So I tried out some Danner Jags, which are opposite end of the spectrum, you know, a less technical shoe that is more made kind of as a crossover hiking slash walking slash streetwear type shoe. Those were too lightweight for this trip. And I tried a couple other brands. I have a few other brands like Merrell's, and my Eddie Bauer Cairns are my favorite boot, but for whatever reason, the last couple times I've tried to wear those, they don't do well for my ankles on a long hike. I'm fine for a short hike with them. They're super comfortable, but I ended up trying out Danner GTX 2650s. And those turned out to be the perfect combination of a lightweight hiker. They are a slightly taller, like above the ankle boot. They're not up the calf, but a little bit above the ankle, which I feel better about, especially considering what we knew we were going to get into on this trail. So those worked out really well for me, and honestly, like, did great through training and for the whole hike. But yeah, went through a few pairs of boots just trying to find the right ones.
I really like these Oslo Agent GTX, I think is what they are. It's like a low, like, sneaker height, but made by Oslo in Romania. Unfortunately, throughout our training, we were kind of hiking on concrete quite a bit. And right towards the end, I was like, man, my big toe is like sore. I didn't necessarily think a whole lot of it. And I was like, well, maybe I'll just wrap it with duct tape. But it wasn't really blistered. It wasn't like an abrasion. It was more like a bruise. And so we got to California and did like a quick little test hike. And then I just had the thought, and I pulled out the insoles, and they were like paper thin. And I was like, oh no. And I had basically mashed down these insoles into nothing on that concrete stairs doing our prep hikes.
Yeah, so that's a good thing to note. Like, you know, the shoe itself was fine, but we ended up kind of ad hoc having to get Dan some new insoles, which was fine. He got Smart Feet hiking insoles at one of the local hiking shops. But just a good call out, like, things you don't think to necessarily check, but your insole thickness can start to wear down on certain terrain.
I think those insoles cost more than what I paid for those shoes. I think the shoes, let me look it up. I think I paid like $75 for them, and then those insoles were like $60.
Yeah, but training at the dam was great, training down at the reservoir. We had not really done that before. I mean, we've run the stairs and such for exercise before, but hadn't really done it for hiking training. Usually in the past, we would make the drive down to Southern Ohio to do, you know, full day hikes and a little more heavy hiking training. But with having the livestock here at the farm, it was kind of, it's a bigger deal to leave for a day than it is to just run over to the reservoir and do a couple to a few hours on the stairs. So that worked out really well for us. So I would recommend if you do live in an area where you don't have a lot of hills that you can easily access, look for a local reservoir, dam, or even, you know, a building that has a lot of stairs that you can access and just go for it. If you get silly looks from carrying all your gear, like, just deal with it. And it was kind of funny because when we were doing the stairs, there were quite a few people that would stop us and ask us what we were training for. And then, you know, oh, I did the AT back in the day, or I did pieces of Pacific Crest Trail, or oh, I hiked Whitney 20 years ago. That was awesome. Like, it was cool because it was almost a conversation starter with people in your community who, you know, you might walk past on the stairs if you're just exercising, but when you throw a bunch of gear on it, it makes you a little more interesting to people.
There was another pair of dudes. They were walking up, like, the kind of grass area next to the stairs, and they would, like, switch back and zigzag up and down, and they had, like, heavier boots and looking like rucksack kind of stuff. And I talked to one of those guys. He was also driving a Toyota Tundra. Talked to them just for a minute, and he was saying that they were going on a hunt in Idaho, I think is what they were prepping for. So
yeah.
Should we get into the trek itself?
Yeah, I mean, so for this trip, for the first time in a long time, we decided to fly Southwest, which was perfectly fine on the way out there. Direct flight with all of our gear being checked. We like to take a direct flight if possible to potentially avoid our equipment getting lost on the way out. So we flew Southwest, and it was funny. I think this hit us twice on this trip, having a stack of soft foods in your carry-on. Be real careful about that. Like, if you have tortillas or what was it? Like,
the cookies
were in your bag, and Dan twice had to get his bags checked by TSA because he had a stack of soft foods that looked questionable inside of his bag. So be cautious with that. But yeah, Southwest was flying on the flight out. We flew into Vegas, which neither of us is a Vegas person. So we kind of got into Vegas at 6 a.m. and got out as quickly as we could. It was a little bit of a mess. We stopped at a Walmart on the outskirts of Vegas to try to, you know, pick up all of our food and get all of our stuff for the trip as far as food and fuel and things like that. They did not have any of the cheapo styrofoam coolers, which was very strange. And when we asked them, they said, oh no, it's been like 3 months since we've gotten a shipment of those in.
And then we saw them when we came back in Kroger or Meijer or whatever, they had styrofoam coolers. So I don't know what was the deal. Maybe out west they have a, like, styrofoam cooler blight.
I think it probably has to do with all the shipping issues right now. But we ended up buying just a cheapo little 12-pack cooler, like soft-sided cooler, and that was all right. It got the job done. But from there, we drove through Death Valley, which was pretty interesting. I hadn't done that since I was a kid, so.
Yeah, there was kind of at the entrance, there were a fair amount of foreigners. There were some folks speaking German, and they had, like, some broken English, and just kind of talked to them. They couldn't, like, figure out how to pay to get their Death Valley pass. It was like a unmanned kiosk, and they were having some trouble.
But it was good. We were able to kind of help them out, and then we saw them again at the little general store down in Death Valley.
And we rented, it was a Toyota 4Runner from National Car Renter, which was just perfect. The 4Runner worked out real, real well.
Dan, at one point, before we left on this trip, a friend of ours had said, oh, you should try, was it called Turo?
Turo.
And I was like, you know, I really don't want to do the, like, borrowing somebody's personally owned car. Like, if we're going to take a car camping in the mountains, I would much rather it belong to a big rental car company than a private person. So we kind of put the kibosh on the Turo rental for this trip.
They did have a lot of, like, test cars. Like, you'll see cars with, like, the crazy zebra print wrap on them. And that's the like if they don't know how the body is going to end up, I think they put that on some pieces. And I think it also helps, like, I don't know if it's something with radar or whatever, so that you can't really tell what kind of car it is. But they had one that was distinctively a Jeep Wagoneer that was like towing. It had like a special trailer that I'm sure weighed exactly some amount, whatever it was, a couple thousand pounds, and they were towing that trailer through Death Valley and ended up like stopping in the middle of the road one time. It's like, what are you guys doing?
Well, it was funny because there was we're assuming a Wagoneer with the trailer, and then right in front of it was Wagoneer without the trailer. So I'm sure there was some sort of comparison study happening about, you know, driving that vehicle with a load through Death Valley and without a load through Death Valley. So kind of interesting for both of us. Dan's a car guy and I used to work in research, so we both enjoyed seeing that actively happening out in the world.
Yeah, it was kind of neat. Then we stopped in Lone Pine, is kind of the town at the bottom of Mount Whitney. And we got fuel that was $6 a gallon. That was like painful to...
Dan was really angry about this.
Yeah. Ugh. I just don't like paying a lot for fuel, and I'll often look at like fuel prices. There's, you know, a handful of gas stations that we routinely drive by, and I try to pay attention to gas prices. I guess I'm like an old man complaining about...
Yeah, you are an old man complaining prices. About gas prices. But it's fine, because, I mean, penny saved is a penny earned, right? Cost avoided.
Then we drove up, so it's like, you know, 100 degrees in Lone Pine, and then you drive up to Cottonwood Lakes Horseshoe Meadows Campground. Is kind of basically the same thing. We picked the Horseshoe Meadows side, seemed to be a little less busy. And so we picked just kind of a site kind of further away. It's a walk-up site. It's not like driving into your campsite. You have to carry your stuff back to your site. So we picked kind of one of the further away sites there. And
it was nice. It was right near the meadow. So, you know, we had just a short little jaunt to get down to the meadow and see what was going on there.
Then we had lunch. You know, we have to buy these, like, pressurized butane cans is how we do it. So, like, if you stop at the Walmart, you have to make sure to get one of those pressurized butane cans, because you can't fly with those canisters. So we had some kind of lunch. Do you remember exactly what we had?
I don't remember that first day. It was just probably some sort of
noodles
and vegetable and meat.
Yeah.
We'll do the chicken packets and frozen vegetables if we're, you know, car camping and we have a little cooler. And then either ramen noodles or like a Knorr Alfredo pack, some of those less expensive but carby foods for getting ready to prep for a hike. And it was really cool there. There was really no noise, but there were some jets that were flying over, which was pretty neat to kind of hear some of the Air Force aircraft flying around, and you're pretty close to it because you're up in the mountain.
So. Yeah, it was tough to, like, find them with your eyes because you could hear them come by, and normally if you look at them, they're, like, way, way ahead of where the sound is, but it was kind of tough to, like, visually locate them. But yeah, it was cool to hear the fighters kind of zipping around.
And those campgrounds were pretty nice. They had compost toilets, which was fine. There was a little pay stand, like you went and I grabbed your little fill out this form and put your money in, and you'd go find your campsite and fill in your information, then go back and drop it off at the little pay drop. And generally, people were quieter at this campsite than we've seen at some of the other campgrounds, especially in some of the busier national parks like Yellowstone and such. This campground was comparatively quiet because it's more of a backpackers campground. So again, it's kind of along the John Muir Trail, and people will pull off here to camp for the night. It was really beautiful, though. There are big pine trees, big conifers. I was a little confused about whether or not you're allowed to have hammocks, because some of the national forests and national parks, they worry about you damaging the trees if you hang a hammock off of them. I didn't see any signage, but that first night I just slept in the tent because I wasn't sure if I'd be allowed to put my hammock up. But then the next day I set up my hammock, which was way more comfortable for me. But generally very quiet in these campgrounds, really nice area, very clean. There were a couple of loud neighbors. I honestly think that it was more just these guys were hiking and fishing and they were quite a bit older. So I think it was actually more, they're probably going a little deaf and so they just talked at a louder tone, which I understand because my dad was going deaf most of my life. So I kind of am a loud talker, but those were our only real loud neighbors was those two guys just would have conversations with each other and you could hear it from three campsites over.
Then for dinner, we had like deli meat and pepper jack cheese in wraps and tortillas. That was really good. And it was a little bit of a mistake, but we had some like fancy fizzy waters that were kind of like overpressurized and they kept falling out of the 4Runner for whatever reason. They had propensity to roll out the back.
It did seem like no matter how we secured them, you'd open the back of the 4Runner and water would come flying out of you.
And like before this trip, I went to our local liquor store and I was like, do you guys have travel gins? Like the little tiny one-shot bottle of gin. And she was like, kind of looked at the shelf and was like, yep, here you go. And like handed one tiny little bottle of gin. I was like, might need a little bit more than that. So she got out like whatever little case for us. And so that first night at altitude, we had a couple Tanqueray and fizzy waters. And then like that was a mistake because we both had like real bad headaches and couldn't sleep and was like not doing real well that first night. I think because of that, that was a mistake.
Yeah, if you don't know, it's generally a bad idea to have alcohol when you're at altitude and you're not used to it, at least the first night or two, so avoid that mistake. We were both feeling perfectly fine with the altitude, and that's why we felt like, oh yeah, we can go ahead and have a drink, and yeah, not a great idea. But it was a little chilly out, and we were both glad we had nice warm sleeping bags, and I don't know, I feel like I slept decently well for being on the ground. I usually don't sleep well on the ground because of my back. It just hurts all night. So I felt like I at least got a few hours of sleep that night. But it was nice. It was beautiful. The sky was pretty clear.
Yeah. Then the next morning was Friday morning. So we flew out on a Thursday morning. Next morning's Friday morning. We had coffee.
We were both up early, and I think that's also just a factor of, you know, we're 3 hours ahead in our brains and not sleeping terribly well first night in camp.
Yeah.
It's pretty typical.
We had coffee and a banana, and then like...
Bananas are awesome at altitude. You get that little potassium hit. It's good.
Again, with the deli meat and pepper jack on a bagel this time for breakfast, and we do have... Like, in advance, we packed up, like, you know, Imodium and Benadryl and ibuprofen. We had all of these drugs, Altitude RX, multivitamins, just all kinds of stuff. And so I took a little bit of, I think, ibuprofen or something for my headache. And then
we drove... down the Horseshoe Meadow Road, we wanted to check out like what the drive was like to Whitney Portal, and it was recommended on one of the sites about hiking Whitney that you do a little day hike a day or so before you do the actual Whitney hike up to Lone Pine Lake. So it's the first section of the Mount Whitney Trail leaving from Whitney Portal, and you can just hike up to this beautiful mountain lake and hang out there. And we decided to go ahead and do that and, you know, test out the drive into Whitney Portal and all that.
So. Yeah, and if you are considering doing this, like, don't underestimate these drives. They are, like, straight down, zigzaggy.
Mountains. Like,
the elevation change is just absurd of some of these roads. So, you know, especially if you're having a trailer or a oversized vehicle of some kind, you know, budget a little bit of extra time.
Yeah, it's not so far as the crow flies. It's more you just have to wind your way down these mountains, and there's a lot of, like, hairpin turns and narrow shoulders and rock falls, so you have to be very cautious when you're driving in the mountains. But yeah, we decided to do that One Pine Lake hike. It was interesting. There is, if you use all trails, typically you're supposed to leave Whitney Portal from the Whitney Trail trailhead, which is very clearly marked. There's like a big wooden pergola and some information, and you pick up your wag bags and all that. But up on the further part of the parking lot, if you park further back at Whitney Portal, kind of past the camp store, there's actually a little spur trail that connects directly up to the Mount Whitney Trail and the JMT. And it took off, what did we say, like 3/4 of a mile of your hike up?
Yeah, so a total of a mile and a half.
Yeah, and it's marked on all trails, but if you're doing the Mount Whitney hike or the Lone Pine Lake hike, it'll want you to leave from the Mount Whitney trailhead with the pergola and all that. But if you take this other one, you cut off a little bit of your distance.
And that parking lot is pretty busy. I was happy that we found parking because we were there like 8 a.m. or so. And they, I mean, you can tell they have like added on and added on and added on and tried to like clear out more slots for parking. But it is pretty tight and pretty crazy in that parking lot.
And even where we parked, like if you had pulled forward another foot, you'd be falling down a cliff into a ravine where there's a creek running. So
yeah,
the parking lot as is built into the side of a mountain, so you need to be prepped for, you know, that. Don't take a wrong step or a wrong tire turn.
Yeah. It was a little bit hazy. There were some wildfires that were around, so there's a little bit of haze. It wasn't by any means choking us out or like really degrading visibility, but you could kind of occasionally get a whiff, like kind of at certain elevations, or I don't know if it was like moisture content in the air, but at certain spots you could kind of smell, you know, char, and then occasionally see a little wisp of smoke come by.
Yeah, and I think that was from the fires over near Yosemite on the other side of the mountain range. So that was kind of interesting that it kind of came up and over.
Yeah.
But we did take that spur trail up, and it was still a beautiful trail. Could be a little tricky at times to find the trail because it's less traveled, but very cool little shortcut there. And it connects you right up to the JMT. And the hike to Lone Pine Lake was really pretty. There's a lot of switchbacks to get up to it. And you do kind of get like, okay, how many more switchbacks do we have? But that's a drop in the bucket compared to what we're going to deal with the next day. So whatever. But it was really pretty. You're in the woods for a lot of it. And then you kind of come out into more granite and big tall pines. And then you're pretty much at Lone Pine Lake. And, you know, it was really beautiful, big granite structures overlooking this lake, and the beach itself was not so much sand, it was more like ground up granite pebbles. But
yeah, it was a little tough to walk on barefoot, but there were trout in that lake. We saw one guy fishing. Then there was another guy, it was at like where it forks off, I don't know, Lone Pine Lake is like 0.2 miles off of the trail, you can see it. And it was where the trail continues, like, down to the parking lot from this guy's perspective, or go to Lone Pine Lake. And he was, like, moving pretty quick and was, like, kind of on your left and, like, past us and was basically running. And we were like, why is that guy running towards the lake? And then he came back at us, like, 2 minutes later, like, whoops. It was kind of funny. Yeah. He was like humble about it, but was kind of like, yeah, wrong way.
It was, we talked to him for just a minute, and he had been spending the last, I think he said 15 days hiking the John Muir Trail. And he, you know, this was the last day of his hike. So he was trying to get down to Whitney Portal to catch his ride. And then we actually ran into him later this day in the parking lot. And I guess his ride had some family emergency and couldn't pick him up. And so he was like trying to beg a ride from somebody up to another town to try to catch a flight back to Seattle. But this poor guy, he was all in a hurry to get down to the parking lot, and then his ride wasn't even there.
Having a time.
Yeah, but nice enough guy. We did just hang out by the lake, kind of, I don't know, strip down some of our sweaty clothes and laid them out to dry. There were a bunch of people just like swimsuits hanging out by the lake, having their lunch, and that's what we did. We had packed a lunch and just chilled by the lake for a couple hours and hung out, and it was beautiful. Just clear blue skies, big puffy clouds. I don't know, just perfect weather. See the little trouts in the lake. Little trout.
I know we keep talking about food, but one thing in particular on this trip, I went to one of our, like, it's not a Whole Foods, but it's similar to that. I think it's called Fresh Thyme. It's just like a kind of more organic, like, they have different offerings than what you might see at just a regular
grocery
store. The
big thing is bulk
store.
Foods, because yeah. So many grocery stores around here got rid of bulk foods during COVID, and this is one of the few that still has them.
Yeah, so they had, like, bulk, you know, nuts, dried fruit, even, like, chocolate and, like, you know, chocolate-covered pretzels, that kind of stuff. But this candied ginger that
we got. Oh, my gosh, so good.
It's, like, kind of covered in sugar, and then it's, like, you know, straight ginger, so it's, like, kind of zippy and spicy, so it kind of, like, is very flavorful if you've been having some bland food. And then ginger generally is also good at, like, settling your stomach. So Amanda was having some tummy troubles on occasion, and I really like this candied ginger that we got. I think that is something that we will do kind of going forward. That was a good buy.
Yeah, that stuff is great. And, I mean, as far as food, we kept things real simple. We like tortillas because they're kind of hard to beat up while they're sitting in your pack. They hold up pretty well. And we did, like, tortillas and cheese and deli meat, and that was great for the first couple days, just lunches. So, yeah, we hung out at the lake for a couple hours, had our lunch, kind of relaxed, stuck our feet in the water, got used to the altitude, and then we hiked back down. We went down to the camp store. On the way down, there was one guy that he was a very tall and, I would say, robustly built man, and he said that his watch, his calorie count on his smartwatch clocked him at 9,000 calories for his Mount Whitney hike, and they did it in 2 days, so they had an overnight. So we were kind of like, oh man, like, helped us kind of figure out how many calories we needed to pack. Obviously, that's a bigger human than either of us, so he's going to burn more calories, but yeah, kind of helped us think a little bit harder about what foods to take and all that for when we left for Whitney the next day. But we stopped in a camp store when we got down and, you know, picked up our little souvenirs for this trip. We usually try to get a Christmas ornament and a sticker for our cooler. And then we drove down to the Lone Pine Outdoor Store because Dan's toes were really suffering, and these people were very helpful. He got, was it Super Feet hiking,
yeah,
or whatever,
Super whatever
Feet Trail.
The better Super Feet one,
yeah.
was.
Yeah. And the guy, like, I don't know, scanned the UPC code and was like, oh, these are going to be $59.99. is that okay? And we're like, yeah, I mean,
you
it's your feet.
It.
What are you going to do? So, yeah, that was fine. Those people at the camp store or the outdoor store down in Lone Pine were super helpful.
They gave us a free sticker and, like, 10% off or whatever, just to throw us a bone. So that was nice.
Yep. And then that night for dinner, we did our steak and potatoes and broccoli dinner. We like to do a good campfire steak whenever we're out on one of these trips.
Yeah, those potatoes turned out well. We cut them up kind of smaller and just put them in foil with butter, and it
seasoning.
Had like a herb pack. Yeah, that was really good.
Yep. And then again, with our, we had the same neighbors a few campsites down as the night before, so they were a little bit loud, but they got quiet early enough in the day. So it's one of the nice things about these backpacking camps is people are a little more respectful of other people trying to sleep. And yeah, we went to bed pretty early. I set up my hammock, which was great, and I slept really well. We had some coyotes pretty close that night, but we also saw some shooting stars. There was a teeny bit of drizzle, but it wasn't like anything significant, nothing that would make me want to cover my hammock. So that was a really good night of sleep.
Yep.
And then we were both up really early.
Yes, so now we're starting Saturday. We were up at about 5, again with our like coffee. We'll boil it in these titanium cups. And then we brought like one like large 32-ounce Yeti insulated cup that we'll put... put that boiling water in. She got like these tea bag style coffees that she liked better than the instant Starbucks.
I hate powder. Instant coffee, like hate it with a passion. I know it has a place in every backpacker's kit, but I just hate it. So these tea bag style coffees were so much better. So much better.
So we drove down again to Lone Pine. There's this Mobius Arch that is kind of famous, and there were a lot of people there around sunrise.
But then they all left. Like, we got there right around sunrise, yeah, and everybody was leaving. So we kind of had the whole arch to ourselves. It was, what, like a mile, mile and a half little loop trail, yeah, pretty flat.
Nothing.
It wasn't bad, and you got to see all these different arches. We saw
Jackrabbit.
And the little jackrabbit nests that were built into the rocks, it was super cute. They had, like, these little nests.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I got a couple good pictures of a jackrabbit. Obviously, I'm nerding out because I love all the animals. But, yeah, the Mobius Arch was really neat. Got a few good shots with the Mobius Arch. One in particular where we tried to make it look like Dan was shoulder-pressing the Mobius Arch. It was cute.
And then we fueled up, so just... you know, being very conservative, we didn't want any sort of running out of fuel because we keep driving up and down this mountain. And so I'm sure that it was like at a half a tank, but just wanted to be sure that it was all topped up.
Mm-hmm. And Dan only brought like one or two changes of clothes. So, you know, I probably overpacked a little, but we were checking luggage anyway. So I kind of didn't care, just threw extra clothes in. And then I didn't have the need necessarily to do laundry at all. We did laundry for Dan, I think, 3 times on this trip, which was, I'm going to say, mildly annoying, but that's fine. But we had to buy, like, a tiny bottle of laundry soap at this gas station, which was fine. But we ended up doing laundry in our bear can and kind of just shaking everything around in the bear can with laundry soap.
Yeah. That worked out. It was fine doing laundry in that bear can. I think I have done that before.
Mm-hmm.
We were also trying to, like, listen. So we didn't have cell reception up at camp. So when we were down in Lone Pine, we were trying to listen to the weather radio reports and use our, you know, phone weather apps to try to see how the weather was going to be.
If you haven't hiked mountains before, the weather is... different. It's very different, and you need to be very cautious and very careful and pay close attention to the weather reports, because as you will find out later in the story, the weather plays a lot into how your trip goes on a mountain. So we were paying close attention to the weather.
So we did that laundry back up at camp, and then kind of had lunch, fettuccine alfredo, and kind of really packed up and like...
To take it back to your point about the weather, though, like what the weather report was saying, and we had planned on leaving for this trip at like midnight to start our summit for Mount Whitney at midnight on like Saturday night into Sunday. And we're listening to the weather, and usually storms hit the mountain, what, like 2 or 3 p.m.?
Yeah.
Almost every day, like you can expect during this season that a thunderstorm's going to hit the mountain in the mid to late afternoon. Well, the weather on this day was saying, hey, it's going to hit at like 11 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up, oh no, we've got to like change our plans last minute. But this was all, it was very complex for anybody who wasn't able to access the weather report. You know, if you're up in camp and you don't have any sort of a phone signal and you can't get the weather report, then you wouldn't know that the storms are coming in super early the next day. So we tried to pay close attention to that and knew that the weather was coming in early. And so we adjusted our plans so that we'd be leaving a little bit earlier and actually be up on the mountain at, I think we ended up going at like 10:45. But
yeah. Yeah, so we were listening to the radio, looking at our weather apps, and it was all pretty much saying 11 a.m. is when the rain is coming. And they were kind of saying it's going to be some severe rain, so we wanted to be as cautious as we possibly could. So we kind of had lunch, and then at about noon, we did a sleeping pill and melatonin, and then set our alarms for 9 p.m. She stayed in her hammock, and I just kind of flattened out the back seats of the 4Runner and laid down in the back of the 4Runner. There were some of these crazy buzzers that people had on their cars. Apparently it's to like scare away marmots. And so, you know, every 30 seconds or a minute or whatever, these little weird buzzer things would go off, and it was kind of difficult to sleep. So I don't think either of us really slept all that well, just kind of dozed as best we could.
I actually took my sleeping bag, because it was warm out, I took my sleeping bag and laid it over the top of my hammock to try to create like a little den for myself. I took a picture of it because it was just kind of funny. I was trying to create my own little dark cozy to sleep in. I slept decently well. I got probably 3 or 4 hours of decent sleep, and I don't think poor Dan slept at all.
And then the afternoon thunderstorms hit about 5 p.m. that afternoon, and so she ended up coming into the 4Runner and just kind of laying down as best we could in there.
Again, my back does not do well laying flat, which is why I like a hammock better, so I didn't sleep at all once we got into the car. And at that point, like, neither of us was sleeping, so we just decided to go ahead and drive over to Whitney Portal.
Yeah. So we drove down. It was about 7:45 p.m. Drove down and then back up to Whitney Portal. Well, down from Horseshoe Meadows up to Whitney Portal. And then kind of got our stuff finalized. And it was, like, coming down as far as the weather. That rain was really driving, like, heavy rain.
So,
and we did have our weather apps. There was a little bit of signal there at Whitney Portal, so we could kind of tell when the rain was going to be finishing was about 10:45. So, like, right when the radar, you know, right when that thing was, like, ending right over us, we hopped out and then started hiking.
Yeah, so it was still drizzling a little, and on the first section of the hike, I don't think either of us had a jacket on because we were warmed up from getting started hiking, but then kind of started to cool off, and we both threw on our outer layers. It was a little drizzly at first, but not even enough to really saturate you. But we did take that little spur shortcut again to get up to meet up with the John Muir Trail. And we had choked down a bagel before we left. I think both of us were kind of like, ugh, our tummies didn't feel like eating anything at this point. But we were essentially, and this is where we get into the Mount Whitney night and day, essentially, like, we are hiking in pitch black darkness. There is no moon out because the cloud cover. So the only light we had was our headlamp. So it's a little bit, if you've never done any night hiking, it's a little bit like hiking in a tunnel. Like, there's just nothing around you. Everything's directly in front of you. And the only thing that exists is what you can see in your headlamp beam. And everything's kind of off in color from the headlamp light. And I don't know, I do feel like I kind of enjoyed this aspect of it because it was almost like two different hikes, even though it was an out and back. It was almost like we did two totally different hikes in that day. So two very different experiences, hiking up at night and back down in the day.
I thought it was kind of nice because you didn't necessarily see the, like, the challenge before you, yeah, which is this giant mountain. You just see, you know, 8 or 10 feet in front of you, and that's it. And it's just left foot, right, yeah, foot, left foot, right foot. So
it was a little bit like being on a Stairmaster, but just with trails instead of big stairs.
And we did another thing, like right before this trip, we got brand new lithium batteries for our headlamps because I knew they were going to be on for, you know, whatever, 10 hours, I guess.
Yeah.
So we put brand new batteries in both our headlamps.
And at some point on this little spur trail, I somehow knocked my Mora knife off of my pack. So my Mora knife is either lost somewhere along this trail or some lucky person picked it up and now has an excellent camping knife. But yeah, I lost my Mora knife in the dark. And it was really a little freaky. We're on the way up. We hadn't quite hit the JMT. And this guy starts coming down at us in the dark. Like he didn't, I think he had his cell phone flashlight. But again, you have no cell signal here. And this guy is just no gear, wearing like jeans and a windbreaker and coming down the mountain. And we're like, are you okay? And he was like, yeah, I just got lost. How far is it to the parking lot? We're like, dude, it's like 11:30 p.m. What are you doing out here? And I think what happened is he was coming back down from Lone Pine Lake and just stopped under a tree when the rain hit. But evidently he had gotten stuck for a few hours. We asked him if he needed any food or water. He refused both and just kept on going back down to the parking lot. That was really weird, though, just being in the pitch black darkness and then all of a sudden there's a person.
Yeah.
But he looked like he kind of could have been in a bad way, but luckily he was not that far from the trailhead.
Yeah, there was maybe just a very few folks. I think only maybe one lady passed us. She was like tall, lanky build, basically like running up up the trail. And then we passed another couple people, but it was very sparse as far as the people that were out.
On the trail section before you got to all the camps and everything. Mm-hmm. So it was really weird, though. You're hiking up in the dark, and you can, like, hear the water from the creeks, and there's a lot of water out here. So, you know, you could hear the water, but you couldn't see anything. And I don't know, it's just really weird. You know, sometimes you'd kind of lose the trail because one rock looks like another rock, but then you realize, oh, no, that rock kind of looks a little more like a step versus just a rock. So it was a little bit touch and go in some of the trail sections because of the added factor of darkness.
I was definitely glad we had all trails running because you could tell, like, instantly, you know, we're 10 feet off the trail and then, you know, get back on it. So we did that a handful of times at night, especially.
Yeah. And it was, I don't know, a couple hours before we hit the trail camp section. And this whole time, one of the interesting things I had happening, I don't know if they just didn't get Dan because I was in the lead and Dan was hiking behind me, but I would get, you know, little moths and stuff flying in my headlamp, and then right behind it would be a bat trying to catch the moth. So I kept having little moments of, it's just a bat, because these things were like flying at my face. So another note for if you're hiking in the dark using a headlamp, you're going to get little bugs and little bats coming at your face.
So we, like, trail crest is,
well, trail camp is below.
Yeah, trail camp is below trail crest. Is trail camp below the 100 switchbacks?
Yes.
Yeah, so at trail camp, it was kind of bizarre, like, walking right in the trail as we are at whatever time it is, you know, 3 a.m. or something, 2 a.m., and there's, like, just, you would come across a tent literally right in the middle of the trail, and then, of course, your headlight flashes it, and then the people kind of grumble, and it's like, well, you are right in the middle of the trail. So if you are considering camping at any of these sites along the way, you know, you might consider going a little bit further away from the trail itself if you don't want to get flashed at all hours of the night.
Yeah, and I did read, like, people were complaining about, oh, people came by at 2 a.m. and their trekking poles clicking. And it's like, well, you know, just go a little further away from the trail. Makes sense. But, yeah, it was cool to come up on trail camp because you would come out of this, you know, pitch black darkness where all you can really see is what's directly in front of you. And then you come out at trail camp and you can kind of see, like, the outline of tents and stuff. And I think by that point the moon had come out, so you could see a little bit. But we refilled water at trail camp because that's kind of your last water before the summit. And then you could just see people starting to wake up and start heading up these switchbacks. So you'd just see these lights dotting the mountainside going back and forth. And that was kind of neat because you could see how the trail was going to go.
So this was the, like, famous 99 switchbacks. And that was really the first time throughout the hike that you do see kind of what you're up against. And you're looking basically straight up and then occasionally could hear, like, voices way off in the distance, and it was like, uh-oh, I gotta go up this thing. But, you know, at the bottom it was still pitch black. I didn't track how many, like, hours or how what the duration was for us to get to the top, but then right near the top is when the sunrise started happening. It was like red was the sunrise.
But those switchbacks, I mean, it was definitely grueling. It was, I don't know, easy to follow, but at the same time, it was just like being on a treadmill for miles, and you're just going back and forth and back and forth, and we were in the dark with our headlamps back and forth, and then you'd come across kind of a washout where you'd have to almost belly yourself along the side of the mountain, and your switchback basically disappears for about 3 feet, and you almost have to, like, I know, like, jump to get from one part to another, or, like, you'd have one little toe hold to go across. So if you do this hike, please be prepared to kind of hug the mountain at times. But the sunrise at the trail crest was just beautiful, and it was nice because at that point you're pretty exhausted, you've done all of these switchbacks, and, like, it's just been nothing but a tunnel for miles and miles and miles in the dark. And then you get to kind of the crest of this trail and the sun is rising and it was bright red and just beautiful. Now, of course, you know what they say, red sky in the morning, sailor take warning. Obviously we're not at sea, but still, bright red sky is not a great sign for weather for the day if you're going to be outside. But it made for some really great pictures, and it was really nice after all of that grueling, hard labor of getting up these switchbacks to kind of have that reward at the top of a beautiful sunrise. Just promise of another day. It was great.
Yep.
And then started what Dan called the absolute bullshit. And I think both of us are willing to use that word for this section of the trail from trail crest to summit. Amanda has bad ankles, and this was not great for me.
It said at trail crest that the summit was 1.9 miles, and one of these ladies we had talked to was, like, on the trail, so we were like, you know, how much further is it? And she was like, well, trail crest is basically just up ahead, and then it says it's 1.9 miles to the summit. And she was like, that's going to be the worst 1.9 miles of your life. And I was like, I've had some tough 1.9 miles. It can't be that bad.
Well, and on top of that, Dan did this hike a few years ago. Like, he did this section of it, even though you came up from the other side of trail crest. Like, he didn't come up the 99 switchbacks. They came up the John Muir Trail, where it comes up on the other side of the range. And he did the Whitney Summit Trail, the 1.9 from Trail Crest. Mm-hmm. And he said he did not remember it being that bad.
Yeah. Maybe it's because, you know, we were coming from Guitar Lake, which was like right there. So we weren't exhausted by any means when I did it previously. But this time, it was, I should have made it a point. And I'm sure that my watch tracked like over 3 miles that we hiked from Trail Crest to the summit. And like the trail conditions itself was just like fist-sized softball, basketball-sized granite chunks. So it's like really tough on your ankles, really tough on the soles of your feet. I'm glad I had those insoles. And, you know, it's just pretty complex, like walking. You know, it was really like a, you know, ankle twisters for 3.5 miles. And then you have to come back down. So it was very grueling. And I think, you know, both of us at some points along this piece of the trail is like, what am I doing with my life? Is this
Well, it is funny because it's probably that point in the trek is the point where you want to quit the most, but it also is the worst place to quit because you're almost there. But then you feel like I'm almost there for 2.5 straight hours. And it was just for me with my bad ankles, it was just exhausting because I kept having to stop and tighten my boot laces and try to adjust and like be very careful where I put my feet. I've torn the ligaments in both of my ankles so many times. I probably need some kind of surgery, but I know once that whole cycle starts, I'm just done for. So I don't want to do that. So I usually just tape the heck out of my ankles and tighten my boot laces as tight as I can. And this was very challenging, this section of the hike. And not gonna lie, like you have that thought of, hey, I'm just done. I'm done. Like, let's turn around. But then you're also just like, no, we're almost there. We've earned this. We're almost there. So yeah, it was pretty grueling, but there were so many great people on the section of the trail that were just like, yeah, you're almost there. You got it. We're gonna get there. Come on. So it was a really great little trail community on the way up. Just people being very encouraging to each other, stopping and checking on each other. Do you have enough water? Do you have enough food? You know, offering people some energy supplements if they looked like they were dragging. It was a really great section of the trail for kind of the really good hardcore people who were like prepared for this. So
And there was one lady that was in shorts. I mean, it is like cold and windy. And so I think I had on basically all of my clothes, not quite at this point, but you put your anorak on
that
or
that
your
was a
puffer.
funny that was a funny thing because your body gets so warm from the exercise. I didn't feel like I was cold. And at one point I turned to Dan and was like, man, I don't know why I'm dragging this much. Like I've got my energy supplements. I'm feeling like physically pretty good, but I was like my actual like output is just getting slower and slower. And then I realized I was cold. Like I didn't feel cold, but I pulled my puffy coat layer. We have these Mountain Hardwear Ghost Whisperer like super ultra light layers. I put that on under my windbreaker anorak thing, and all of a sudden my speed boosted. I felt better. I realized like my body was cold, but I didn't feel it because I was working. So it was an interesting thing, and this also hit me later on in the trail, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But yeah, that cold at the summit, you don't realize it. And this lady passed us, and well, she passed us at one point, but we kind of like leapfrogged the last portion of the trail, and she was wearing shorts, but she said she was a marathon runner. She was kind of okay, but she didn't spend that much time at the summit because it was so cold.
Yeah. So we did, you know, obviously make it up to the summit. There is a stone
Hut.
building structure, hut kind of thing at the top, and it has signs all over it like, get out of here, you're gonna die, lightning is gonna kill you. And so there were all kinds of warnings about that, but they had like a cool laser etched, you know, Mount Whitney Summit 14505 sign and like little you know, notebook where you can sign your name in the registry.
Yeah. And you can write on the inside of the hut. They're supposed to have like little Sharpies, but the Sharpie that was up there was like squashed and frozen and didn't work. So we didn't, I mean, I did the best I could, but couldn't really get our name on the hut.
Yeah.
So if you go, make sure you take your own Sharpie. But it was neat. We saw a marmot at the very top. There was a marmot on the top. And on the way up, we saw half of a marmot's face laying on the ground. And Dan was like, how did that get up here? And all we can think is probably dropped by a raven or something. A crow dropped it. I don't know. But it was like a half-consumed marmot skull that was just laying in the middle of the trail. But we saw a real, like, live marmot at the top, which was kind of cool. I think I got a quick picture of that guy. And there were a few people up there. There was a nice couple that had hiked up from the JMT that we took their picture. And there were a few other various people.
Yeah, there was maybe five or I don't think there were 10 people up
in the top. No, we were kind of part of the earlier group. So we left Whitney Portal at 10:45. We summited at, it was about 7:45, 8 a.m. And that was about right based on what we had hoped to do on this hike. So maybe a little longer than we wanted to take, but we also took some extra breaks to, you know, make sure that we were fueled up for that last section of the hike.
Yeah. Yeah, at trail camp, we took a little long break and had some more substantial food and refilled water. But that was really the only, like, break that we took.
Yeah, but
and that was about, is it 8 hours or 9 hours of hiking? 9 hours.
9 hours, yeah. 9 hours to get up, which, in the dark, I was pretty happy with.
Yeah.
Considering the number of times we were like, is this the trail? No, go over here. Yeah, always, make sure you bring a battery brick if you're using an electronic map and trying to hike in the dark. Obviously, you can't really do a great job of wayfinding with big mountains or anything in the dark. So if you're going to use an electronic tracker, make sure you bring a battery brick.
I had to recharge my watch, too. I had it running and basically the battery died. I have a Garmin Fenix 5S is the smaller one and it kind of died, the battery died, so I had to recharge it.
Yeah. Mine was fine, but I have the 5X.
X is the bigger big one.
But, yeah, so the summit was great. We did see, so we got up to the summit, and in the distance, you could see the thunderstorms coming in. So we, you know, spent our time, took our pictures, enjoyed, you know, our achievement, and then immediately just started booking it back down the mountain and going as fast as we could across those boulders and stuff. And it was interesting. There were still a lot of people coming up, and we passed a lot of people who were coming up when we were booking it back down. And there were a couple folks we kind of warned, like, hey, the weather's coming in. And some people hadn't checked the weather report and didn't know that the weather was coming in early. So, you know, just kind of letting them know, if you're going to try to summit, you want to pick up the pace. And I felt bad at one point. There was this British couple that was coming up, and the poor woman was just outright sobbing, like crying. They were not really dressed for the weather. I think they had on like typical workout gear and carrying bottles of water. But the guy was kind of being pretty mean. It sounded like from the conversation we could overhear, the lady was saying, hey, we need to turn around. The weather's coming and we gotta go. And he was bound and determined to summit. And even at one point made kind of a snide comment to her of, you know, oh, I got a quick way for you to get down, and pointed down the cliff's edge. I was just like, whoa. This poor woman was just sobbing, and 100% she was totally right. Like, they should have started down.
Yeah, there were a few cases like that. There was another set of folks that almost looked like a father-son combo. The father was silver hair, you know, maybe 70. And we were kind of cautioning them, like, hey, look at what you're heading into. And it was, you know, there was cloud cover building right around the summit. And he was like, oh, we can make our own decisions. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just one of those things, like, you want to try to, like, keep an eye out for each other on the trail because, you know, you never know what somebody's experience is going to be. I'm always going to tell someone I think they might be walking into a dangerous situation. I'll at least give them a heads up. Yeah, you can absolutely make your own decision. But the wise decision is the wise decision. So please try to remember, if you're hiking in the mountains, you know, don't put yourself into a situation that not only puts you in danger, but any potential rescuers could be put in danger. And Mount Whitney's no joke. A few people were talking about, they found bodies down at the base of, I think, the chute, the section that in the winter you can kind of slide down from the top. They found a body there this spring because someone went down and just didn't make it out. You know, this type of hiking can be pretty serious. It's not something that you just wake up one day and decide to go do. You have to prep for it. So anyway, we were booking it back down the mountain, trying to get out before the weather really hit. And those switchbacks on the way down, I thought it was potentially worse than on the way up. Because on the way up, you can't really see. It's just 1 foot, 2 foot, 1 foot, 2 foot. On the way down, you can kind of see where you're going, and it just seems to take forever coming down these switchbacks. And it's just, it's almost like the view doesn't change ever.
Yeah. There was a trail runner, too, with her dogs. There was some kind of, like, husky, malamute, something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was serious.
Yeah,
like,
she was nuts.
Very admirable, though. She was just running these switchbacks.
So we got down to trail camp again below those switchbacks. I don't think we refilled water.
No, we didn't need to on the way down.
We did. There was, because we did at one point on those switchbacks, we stopped for a minute.
Yeah, there was like a little trickle of fresh melt or rainwater, I guess, coming down the switchbacks, and it seemed cleaner potentially than.
So we had topped up. Yeah, if you're filling water from a running creek or river or whatever, you want to face the opening of your water bottle downstream, so that you don't have silt and stuff running directly in there. It kind of has to, like, shoot back into your water bottle. And so this was, like, running water. The water at trail camp was kind of stagnant. It was fine, but it was just static water. And we thought this water on the switchbacks was cleaner, so we topped up there. And then kept hiking down, and like she mentioned, on the way up, we could hear this kind of babbling brook, but you just couldn't see it. So on the way down, we could see it the whole time, and it was really very beautiful. You know, it's like the one kind of green swath through the whole sea of granite, and there was, you know, some grass and shrubs and a couple trees that were going along this creek. So we got, there were a lot more people, like a lot more people. So on the way up, like I mentioned, there was just a handful of folks. We were kind of leapfrogging, but now there's people everywhere. There's people going down, up, just kind of sitting there. And we got to within about 5 miles of the end of our hike, and the heavens just opened up.
Yeah, and the temperature dropped, everything opened up on us, thunder, lightning, pouring down rain, just, it all of a sudden, I mean, it went from 0 to 100 and nothing flat, and I think what got me the most was the temperature drop, because, again, like, I was moving, so I didn't necessarily feel like I was getting cold, but I was, and then you're completely soaked through at the same time.
Yeah, so the trail kind of started to fill up with water. It was this same storm that basically washed out Death Valley. They said it was like a once in a thousand year storm, and these roads were washed out in Death Valley. And kind of after a loud clap of thunder, you would hear, see, and feel rocks rolling down the mountain and see like a big dust cloud from where these rocks are just pulverizing the granite on the way down. And we were like, oh my gosh, this is really bad. So, you know, our feet are starting to get soaked because the trail's filling up with water. We had used Camp Dry on all of our gear, and that works
for
like.
But there's only so much because like when it's running down your legs, like even though my boots are Gore-Tex and they're great boots, when the water's like running down your legs, it just goes into your socks, into the top of your shoes. It's, I mean, we were pretty saturated within minutes, and there were a lot of people that were hiking that just took shelter under pine trees, which I don't know. I mean, I guess in a pinch, if you're staying on the mountain, great, but our goal was to get off the mountain because there were rock falls, there was lightning, like get off the mountain. So we put our trekking poles away to try to prevent anything. We separated. That's one of the things, if you're ever in a lightning storm, like separating so that the lightning doesn't spark from one of you to the other if somebody does get struck. Or if a tree falls, you know, somebody's potentially still able to get help. But yeah, there were people who were just stopping, and we were just booking it. Like,
yeah, we were basically moving running down as the trail fast as we could. Yeah. And there were a couple other folks that were of the same mind. They were like, I just want to get out of here.
Yeah.
Let's see. So I think that was kind of about it. And that was the end of our trip.
So, anyway, we're coming down the trail and we finally hit like the last section, right above Whitney Portal of Switchbacks. It's like 2.5 miles of switchbacks, which again is kind of excruciating because you can see the next switchback, but you can't get to it because the undergrowth is so thick. So you just have to keep going down the trail back and forth. And of course we're trying to rush to get out of the weather. Rocks are coming down around us. Everything's just saturated. I think I started to go a little pre-hypothermic. I sometimes have issues regulating my body temperature, and I think I got cold and wet. And Dan was super focused on getting a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale at the Whitney Portal store, and so Dan just like booked it. But at one point I stepped wrong and I got my foot stuck between two rocks, and I looked up and he was like gone. So we kind of had a little bit of a heated marital discourse about that later on because he really wanted a beer and I was stuck between two rocks.
She had been ahead for basically this entire hike. She was up front. And I was kind of like, do you want me to lead for a bit? And then it just kind of turned into what she described.
Yeah. So he was very focused on getting down, and I felt like he should have turned around and checked on me a little more. So just a word to the wise, if you're hiking with a partner, make sure you check in with each other every few minutes. And if you turn around and they're not there, you know, come back and make sure they're not stuck between two rocks. But I got myself unstuck. It was fine. But yeah, definitely had a little heated marital discourse regarding that one.
So we got down to the parking lot.
Quickly changing the subject.
Well, we got down to the parking lot and we knew that she had lost that Moore knife and we were keeping an eye and we thought maybe it just flopped out of the Forerunner. So I kind of looked around the Forerunner and she was just standing there at the basically edge of the parking lot. And I walked up and I was like, what? And she was like, what? And she said, this is the wrong parking lot.
Yeah, I started to like lose my brain capacity.
And I was like, our Forerunner's right there. And she was like, oh, okay.
Well, and I think part of it too is in the dark when we had parked the night before, I thought our Forerunner was way closer to where the trail head was. And so we came down and I was looking for the Forerunner. I was like, our car's not here. Like, I think in the dark, I had not realized how far we had walked to get to the trailhead. So when I came down, I was like, I don't see our silver Forerunner anywhere. And it turns out it was just like down kind of around this corner a little bit. But I was honestly like a little pre-hypothermic, and you know, luckily we were right near the car. But yeah, it's just something to keep an eye out for if you start to notice you're getting kind of out of sorts mentally and starting to lose. I mean, my fingertips were turning blue. That's how cold I got all of a sudden. I mean, just making sure that you take care of yourself. We got to the car turned it on, started blasting the heat. I'm pretty sure I gave the guy in the truck parked next to us a show because I had to get out of my wet clothes. I just stripped down right there in the parking lot and threw on some dry clothes and got into the heater. But first I tried to go into the bathrooms, the toilets that were right there, and this girl just like ran in front of me, like basically like pushed me out of the way and then slammed the bathroom door and locked it. And I was just like, oh, okay, I guess I'm gonna have to change in the parking lot. But I think she was probably just as desperate as I was to get dry and warm, but that was kind of funny. But yeah, definitely gave a show to the people in the truck next to us, so. You're welcome for that if you're ever listening to this.
So we just kind of dumped all of our wet stuff in the back of the 4Runner. This is part of the reason it was such a perfect car, is we just tossed everything in the back. Mm-hmm. And then started driving down, and there's rocks. Like, whenever there's a big thunderclap, I mean, you can just feel it, and then there's rocks that come tumbling down the mountain.
And we're not talking, like, a fist-sized rock. We're talking, like, Volkswagen-sized rocks.
Yeah, like boulders. So they're coming down into the road, literally, like, in front of us, behind us, around us. Luckily, not on us. And we're like, oh, my gosh. There was one car kind of ahead of us, and then did they pull off or did they just
They pulled over and kicked some rocks out of the way, some of the ones that were more like toaster and microwave
basketball size. But we were like, I'm just going to get out of here. And so we were booking it down that Whitney Portal Road. And then we started seeing emergency vehicles coming up. I mean, there were at least 5 or 10 emergency vehicles that were coming up. And later we discovered they had closed that road, I mean, literally minutes behind us.
Yeah.
And they closed it like 4 days, F-O-U-R, for 4 days they closed that road. So we made it out literally with minutes to spare. And it was in the, like, say 3 p.m. range. Is that when we were?
Yeah, it was about 3 o'clock, I think. Okay. And, it may have been earlier than that. But regardless, there were people that got stuck on the mountain for a while. They started shuttling people out, we heard, after a day or so. But, I mean, there were people that were stuck up there for days because of this storm. And the roads were closed, and they had to bring out bulldozers to clear the roads. But we got out just in time. And it was funny. We got down to Lone Pine, and we were like, oh, thank God, we're done. We pulled into a restaurant. We, like, sat down on their... They had, like, a covered patio. And it was, like, a little rainy in Lone Pine, but it wasn't bad. And they were like, oh, hey, what can we get for you? Okay, take your drink order. And, you know, we've been hiking for 15 hours. Like, we're starving. And we're so excited to get food and a beer. And the waitress, like, turns around to go back into the bar to put our order in. And the power goes out. In all of Lone Pine, and the next town up, and the next town after that. And the waitress comes back, she's like, so we can't serve anything at all, and you're going to have to leave. And we're like, well, how long is the power out? And she said, well, usually when it does this, I mean, it could be a few hours, at least a few hours, or it could be a few days. We don't know. So we're a little hangry at this point, but...
So we drove to the hotel, which was a little ways up. It was the Quality Inn Alabama Hills, which was a plenty fine hotel for what we needed. And the guy there, he's like, you know, we can't, like, print the card to get you into your room. Even if you got into your room, you couldn't do much. Like, I don't think their hot water was working.
Yeah.
So he was like, you couldn't really do much. So we were like, all right, where's the next? There was a very nice other customer there also. We were like, we need food. Where's the closest food? And the other customer guy was like, well, I have some, like, peanuts and crackers. And I was like, no, we have trail food. We need, like, real bolus food. Of real hot
food. As our neighbor would say, food. You food, know, like, food.
So we asked the hotel guy, and he was like, well... Big Pine is 45 minutes that way, and that'll be the closest food. So I set the cruise control at speed. I won't.
But I think one of the funniest things was we were standing there talking to the hotel guy, and this lady comes running up to the desk, and she's like, "Hey, I need to cancel my reservation for tonight because I got in for a Whitney permit to start hiking tonight, so I've got to start hiking tonight." And we all look at her like, "Are you insane?" And we kind of told her they closed the road. She's like, "Oh, I'm still going to try." We're like, it's all washed out. Like, the whole mountainside is washed out. Like, you can't get there. And the hotel guy was like, "Well, I can't even do anything for your reservation because I can't get on my computer because I don't have power. So I don't, like, leave me your name and your information. And I'll do what I can." But this lady was going to try to go hike Whitney out of Whitney Portal when you couldn't get to Whitney Portal. Yeah. I think she was confused about what was going on. But she was very excited to get her Whitney permit. I felt kind of bad for her.
Yeah. So 45 minutes away, Big Pine, they had Copper Top Barbecue, which was good.
Yeah, it was good.
They had this reverse tap beer thing where it fills the beer from the bottom. It's like a proprietary cup with a orifice at the bottom that allowed you to fill beer. So we had a couple beers and then like a big, you know, pile of barbecue. I think we split whatever sampler they had was like
tri-tip and
ribs and
chicken. Yeah, or something like that. It was really good. Mac and cheese,
yeah.
Green chili was good. That was like their vegetarian option. It was pretty good. But yeah, it was just like, I don't know, a comedy of crazy situations after we started back down off Whitney.
And then, like I mentioned, we had just tossed all of our wet clothes in the back. And as we said earlier, we got this cooler, just a soft-sided cooler that had, like, tipped over, apparently, in the back seat in the flurry of activity. And so it had leaked, like, meat juice all over the 4Runner. And we're like, oh my gosh. So we drove back to the hotel. We did stop and get some, like, vitamin C and some more ibuprofen. We did not pack enough ibuprofen.
Yeah.
Note to self for next time. And it was just still dumping down rain. So we were like, we're just going to leave the 4Runner as is and then just go to bed. So we had a good shower.
Yeah, power was back on by the time we got back down to Lone Pine. They said it had just come on, like, minutes before we rolled in, which was good timing. So we were able to get into our room, we were able to get hot showers, and I think we were both asleep by like 7 p.m.
Yeah.
That was, if you've ever had one of those sleeps after you've been really cold and wet, where you just snuggle under the covers and you almost feel overheated, but it puts you into such a good deep sleep, that was wonderful. That's the sleep I had that night.
Yeah.
But, it was crazy. Like, that whole trip was just crazy, and I don't know, I can't express enough, like, how serious you need to take the mountains in bad weather. Like, if it's going to be bad, you know, summiting is really cool, and it's a huge achievement, and, you know, some people wait for years to get a permit. But it's not worth your life if, you know, things do go wrong. I think we timed things pretty well. I think I wish that I would have packed maybe some of those heater packs for my hands and, you know, when I got so cold, just being able to have that immediate heat to kind of help with blood flow. Because, you know, I was still thinking pretty clearly about my next steps when I started to get a little out of my head, but I kind of knew what was going on and knew that we were less than a half mile from the car at that point when I, you know, got my foot stuck between two rocks and couldn't see Dan and, like, felt myself going, like, pre-hypothermic. I knew we were close, so it was fine. I was able to talk myself through it. But if that had happened 7 miles from the trail end, we would have had to stop and take, like, some potentially, like, serious measures to warm up and get dry and, you know, take care.
Yeah.
But I wish I would have packed some of those little heater packs. And then probably a better waterproof layer. Because my
even my Gore-Tex coat was just soaked through.
Yeah.
From sweat on the inside and then wetness on the outside.
Yeah. Like I should have thought about, I had a trash bag in my pack for pack cover, and I should have thought about just tearing a hole for my head and putting that over me.
Yeah.
To try to keep the rain out of my clothes, because I mean we camp dried everything before we left, yeah. And it didn't matter. This rain was so hardcore.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've seen weather like that recently.
There was at one point, I should have mentioned it earlier, when we did the Grand Canyon a few years ago, we did really well to like try to eat something every 15 minutes. We did this in Bryce mm-hmm. Canyon too, just to keep your calories up. You know, at the end of this, like our belly is empty because we're just doing energy gels and mm-hmm. like, you know, fruit that digests instantly, dehydrated fruit. So our bellies were kind of empty, but we had energy.
Yeah.
But at one point, it was kind of near trail crest, I guess. Like, I started getting a little, like, loopy and, like, delirious, and, like, the vision kind of started to, like, zero in, and I was like, whoa. And so I had to, like, just throw down my pack quick, and I was like, oh, no. And, like, had to suck down some calories real quick and chugged a bunch of water and, like, just take a minute. But, you know, overall, I think we took enough food. We were at the top, and I was like, oh, we have plenty of food. And then about halfway down, I was like, oh, I hope we have enough food. And we you know, had a little bit left over. It was mm-hmm. the appropriate amount. I didn't do a whole lot of math, but we had some, like, Quest protein bars, dehydrated fruit.
Stroop waffles
for the win. Oh, energy gels, Cliff Blocks. We really like the watermelon Cliff Blocks.
Oh,
those were
yeah.
the best. The
Salted watermelon. Mm, those were good. And you have these like protein cookies.
I didn't
care
like
for
the
them.
Quest protein cookies.
They tasted like fake sugar, and I was like, why are we doing fake sugar?
Were
on
fake
trail?
Sugar.
Yeah. Ugh, gross. Another thing to note, I did do the smart thing, and when we were in Peru hiking at altitude, I had some gastric issues, partially from a stomach infection from when I was in the jungle there, but I think it was exacerbated by being at altitude. I started having some similar issues on this trip, and it was kind of when we got above 10,000 feet or 11,000 feet, and I luckily had the foresight to take Gas-X. So some people get headaches when they get to altitude, and I have had that happen before, and usually I can just like drink a bunch of water, get some energy going, and I feel better. Maybe take some ibuprofen. But what I've had these last couple big altitude trips is just terrible gastritis, and I'm going to talk bluntly about this because it's important for people to know. It's not even like actual like passing of anything except for gas and gas pains. So I evidently personally have some issues at altitude with my gases. The only thing I can think is like maybe the gases in my intestine just expand a lot at altitude, maybe more than other people, I don't know. But Gas-X was a huge help, and next time I'll probably take twice as much and probably start taking it a day early to try to like get rid of any gas that exists in my system before we hit that like 10,000-11,000 foot mark. But that's the way altitude affects me. I think Dan started to get a little bit of the headache and tunnel vision that you can get at altitude, and just had to like stop and take on more water and some energy. But yeah, for me it was the gastric issue, and it was weird because it was like as soon as we got below 10,000 feet, it kind of went away. Like, I was fine. But it wasn't even like really passing anything. It was just like intestinal gas cramps. Mm. I don't know. It was like a really bad night after Taco Bell. But just something to think about, maybe think about throwing some Gas-X in your pill pack for the day, just in case that happens to anybody who's out there like thinking about going to altitude. You might not have the brain side of altitude sickness, you might get the tummy side, and it's mm-hmm. no fun.
keeping on the food side of things. So the next morning at the hotel, so we slept real well. The next morning we got up at 5:30. I think breakfast probably starts at 6. So we made like the coffee in the room, got cleaned up a little bit, and went down. They had, I think part of the reason we picked this hotel is they had the hot breakfast. So they had like the kind of standard powdered eggs that were baked, and then the waffle
Waffles.
maker, and then really what was good, I think, was like yogurt and milk. So we hadn't had any kind of like dairy or anything like that in whatever 4 or 5 days at this point. So we had, you know, coffee and waffles and eggs and a couple cereals to go. I think I mixed like the cereal with yogurt, was that was the combo to do. So that was that next morning breakfast that was really good. And then we tried to start taking apart the 4Runner and opened up the door, and it just smells like rotting meat in there. And it was like, oh gosh. So.
Yeah, and all the wet clothes, like we were gonna spend a couple hours. We actually, while we were on this trip, we were in the process of buying a property in Arizona. So we had to hang around the hotel for a while to do some online activities regards to that, like signing things electronically and all that. So while we were doing that, we just laid out a clothesline from the trunk of the 4Runner over to a tree in the parking lot and like hung out all of our stuff. And I'm sure we got some weird looks, but then you look around and there's other people in other cars doing similar
Yeah.
things because a bunch of people staying at the hotel had come down, you
Yeah.
know, earlier in the day off the mountain or had their trips canceled and like, you know, or people who got stuck in the rain elsewhere. So there were a lot of people doing car clean outs in the
Yeah.
hotel parking lot.
One of these guys was parked next to me. She was in, I think you were like in doing laundry or
Yeah.
taking a shower, and this guy was talking to me about like what we were up to, and he was like, we had Whitney permits today, but like there's no way. I mean, the road is closed, and so he just canceled it. And he was like, we had 2 nights at this hotel, you know, we had the hotel sandwich around our Whitney permit. And we were like, oh, we're going to Sequoia. And he was like, well, if you want to stay here, we're heading out. You can have our hotel room. Like, we can't use it. And that for whatever reason, they wouldn't let him cancel. I don't know why. But anyway, he
Yeah.
was very nice. And like, it would have sucked for us. Like, your whole vacation is planned around this permit. And then if Mother Nature decides otherwise, that would have really sucked. And we kind of lucked out that our permits were on that specific day, and we
Yeah.
were able to do it.
Yeah, that was really like really amazing that our timing was right on with that and you know, kind of a gift that all worked out for us because just a few hours later and we would have been in really bad shape
Yeah.
with being able to do this. But as it was, we had a pretty crazy and incredible hiking experience and, you know, learned a few things, you know, came to terms with a few things. I think we prepped well.
Yeah.
I think there's a few things we would change in the future, like I said, just making sure we were really well prepared for wet weather. I don't think we were quite as well prepared for that as we should have been. But other than that, it was an incredible hike. I will say it's probably one of the few hikes that I've ever done that I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't need to ever do that one again. It was pretty brutal. It was fun. It was a good challenge, but you know, not on my repeats list. I think once was enough for me for Whitney, you know.
Yeah.
We achieved it. I'm good. I don't need to like go climbing across those bouldery rocks anymore. My ankle would be very mad at me if I tried it again.
Yeah. So that's about our Mount Whitney excursion.
Yeah. Are you glad you did it a second time from a different path?
Yeah, we were trying to think of like whose idea was this. I'm
Yeah.
not really sure we figured out whose idea it was or why we decided to do it, but I am definitely glad that we did it again,
Yeah.
or I did it again.
And
Yeah.
did it together.
Yeah.
It was fun. And yeah, I don't know. We'll definitely go hiking in the Sierras again. You know, now that we have our place in Arizona, we're looking forward to doing more hiking out west in general and spending some time maybe in the White Mountains, since that's near where our retirement property will be. But we're just, I don't know, it was an amazing experience. It was a challenge, and we achieved it, and we feel good about it. And from there, we went on to Yosemite and Half Dome, which we will get into in another episode. So glad we're back. It's been a minute since our last episode aired, and that's really just because we have been so slammed and busy with prepping for this trip and everything that goes around that, as well as life in general. So we appreciate everybody who's been hanging on, waiting for this next episode to come out, and please expect more in the future. We're looking forward to throwing together our Half Dome episode and a lot of other things, going over some older trips we've been on. So thanks for joining us today, and keep adventuring out there.